Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday, Tuesday, casual Tuesday, Wednesday, casual hump day, Thursday, casual Thurs, that's what we call it, and Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, January 4th, 2019. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, new Congress sworn in with the most diverse House ever. Also, Republicans in the Senate are beginning to crack under the weight of the shutdown. Meanwhile, Democrats introduce major voter reforms. Medicare for All hearings set to be held. Democratic governor of Maine signs an order to give 70,000 Mainers health insurance. Meanwhile, Bolton and Pompeo set out on their excellent warmongering adventure. And workers win as the Obama National Labor Relations Board joint employer ruling upheld in a D.C. circuit court. Rashida Tlaib wants to impeach the MFR. And the economy adds over 300,000 jobs. Unemployment ticks up just a hair, but actually for good reason. All this and more on today's Majority Report, ladies and gentlemen. We mentioned this yesterday, doing a slightly special thing just to kick off 2019. And I got to say, kudos to me for not stumbling too much over 2019 in the beginning opening of the show. I was convinced I would do that. I probably will do that next week, but I managed to get through all of the first half week of broadcasting on our program, on our program without messing that up. So I'm very, very pleased with myself. Should also say today we're doing a breaking format. No guests today. We're going to get to phone calls quickly. We got two big stories. Big in my mind. Stories that I want to talk about before we get there, and then we'll take calls and we will talk about movies that we saw on break if we happen to see any, as opposed to having a movie recommendation. So this we may be backward looking a little bit on these movie recommendations. I also want to say we've been getting a lot of emails lately, and they have been it's extremely gratifying. I don't have a chance to answer them all. But for the most part, I read them all fairly quickly as they come in. Got one, two or three or four or five, six, sometimes more a day, just from listeners who are either like relatively new or a long time, who are just telling us. I mean, maybe this time of year, people get a little more sentimental. I'm not sure, but And telling us that they appreciate the show. And I just wanted to acknowledge that and tell you, we do read them. Got an email from a 15-year-old young woman who is in high school. Apparently, her teacher is a bit of a jerk. I'm not going to say her name just in case her teacher, but it sounds like her teacher does not listen in. She says he is basically suggesting or not correcting people when they talk about the communist that was voted in New York. That would be AOC. There's her mom is a Trump supporter who does not like her questioning her teachers. She lives in a conservative district where there's little funding for anything outside of sports. It sounds a little bit like a crap show, but I will tell you this. There's no worse time for some people than high school and junior high. And having a junior higher in my own home, I can attest to this. And having actually gone to junior high myself, at that time, of course, it was the horse and buggy that made it so difficult when you would get there every day on the horse and buggy. But I will tell you, that is one of the great things about high school. Enjoy it to the extent that you can. And then know that then you're able to fly the coop. And it only gets better. It only gets better.
Amen to that.
So, but thank you for listening and appreciate it. And she wants to thank the Majority Report, the Michael Brooks Show, and the Antifada. Some of my favorite things to watch and listen to. You're all doing something revolutionary. She ends the email. So it was very kind.
Aww.
Very sweet. And
thank you.
And much appreciated for letting us know that you're out there and hang in there.
Good luck.
Man, I think I counted down.
Improve.
I think I counted down the days until I could move to New York for like 2 years in the back of my diary. No joke.
There you go.
Like a sad girl advent calendar.
Exactly. And I think there's a lot of people who do that.
I just skipped out on middle school.
I crushed it.
That's really.
Well, the funny thing is like this, this email, and she lives in Ohio. And that email and what was the latest conservative hit job on, I want to say hit job, but really a failed hit job on AOC reminded me of Footloose. Not the remake, the original, where it was illegal to dance in the town. Who was the guy? The six degrees of
Kevin Bacon.
Kevin Bacon was the rebel who came to town, taught everybody how to dance. And there's something deeply, deeply wrong with the conservative movement, and they are. You know, I don't hold much stock in this because I think they're terrified of a lot of things, and much of them are made up, right? I mean, like, I don't think the reason to, I'm not in favor, per se, of the caravan because there were people in Michigan who were afraid that the caravan was going to come and take their house or something. And so my support for AOC is not founded in the fact that they are so terrified of her. But I will say that I am beginning to get more enjoyment than I think a person should out of how afraid they are.
You know the phrase, living in someone else's head?
Right. Exactly. So they have been... The Gateway Pundit, is that who it was? Or somebody, someone on some right-wing outfit.
Some idiot.
Anonymous Q 1776.
Oh, yes. A very, very, well, very happy, well-balanced person.
I'm talking about yesterday. They, or 2 days ago, came out with the revelation that in high school, Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez went by the name Sandy. And that they... confirmed what she had been saying publicly was that we moved out of town into a richer town where we were ended up being one of the poorer members of the town so I could go to a good school, just outside of the city, outside of the Bronx. And that apparently was, I'm not sure exactly what the theory was.
The theory is Republicans always resort to like the most crude form of identity politics. So they're basically saying like, she's not real.
Right.
It's like Rick Ross. He was a security guard. He wasn't a real gangster.
Yeah,
she doesn't have working class cred. Her family scrapped together savings to make it possible for her to go to a better public school. Bullshit.
I just saw the phrase, she misrepresented her past. Like, whatever that
means. Whatever, it's nonsense.
Well, so that failed. Sad. That failed, but these detectives on the right found this incredibly damaging video that they put up on Live Leak. This is the place where they literally put like snuff films, right? And this is it. Folks, if you're at home, please sit down, because it turns out that at one point in her past, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez danced. Dance with a guy, then with a girl? What the hell? Okay. Now, I know there's probably a lot of you who are disturbed out there.
Disillusioned.
We're going to have to bail on the Green New Deal, guys.
She clearly was younger, but that's no excuse for dancing
she's already
like that.
In college, dude.
All right. Here is, well, no, but we don't know that. When this is released, we don't know that she's
well, she's
in college.
At least a junior or senior in high school.
Right, right.
So, I mean, still, point still stands.
Okay.
I was appalled.
But here's, now, aside from the fact that they thought that this would, that video would somehow be damaging to her, and everybody was like, oh my God, this is it's incredibly charming. Like, wow. She, like, what an authentic person who, you know, like, it turns out, and this is what's even more bizarre about this, that was not the video. What they did is they took clips of her from another video and they changed the music. The music you heard in that was called Tom Tom by
Tom Tom Fever, I think.
Tom Tom Fever.
Sounds like the music that Josephine Baker would come out to in her little banana skirt.
Right. Let's put a pin in that as to like why they did that. But it turns out that what that video was from a video that was made in at BU by a bunch of kids who were doing the Listomania meme, essentially, from like, I guess, 10 years ago or so.
Yeah, about 2009,
2010. And I'm not convinced this wasn't even like commissioned by BU, because it's all BU students wearing BU clothing and they're trying to like, it seems like it's like a promotion for the admissions office based upon this meme that was going around on video. So let's watch this part of it. It's a different song and it's so weird. Like, I don't know if they thought like we can't show her that we can't show any like just sort of like average white guys in there or something. I think
they wanted to make it look like a vanity project. Like she just like wanted to be filmed dancing or something.
Yeah, weird. But here is the original.
She's super narcissistic, folks.
Part of the original. The original video. It's unbelievable. Okay, now
that's enough of that.
I know. I can't take it anymore. Although it does bring back some rough memories for me, because that's right next to the BU Law School, which I attended for a year, and that is sometimes hard for me to watch. But they, for whatever reason, they cut out parts of that video and put it with that new Tom Tom music that does sound like Josephine Baker, and I think was supposed to be reminiscent, like sort of like, this is what's happening way uptown. And there's some, like, you know, like, crazy jungle music going on. Like,
they're smoking some jazz cigarettes.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
smoking the Negro's devil stick.
Wacky tobacco.
Dominicana voodoo priestess is coming out.
But I can't, for the life of me, like, why didn't they just release the original video? Or why didn't they make the other video more nefarious? Like, they're so out of touch that they can't even, like, I don't know how you would demonize her from that video, but they did such a bad job about it. And then the interesting thing about this whole thing is that that Listomania thing was a meme that was part of a mashup that came from the Breakfast Club scene. So she was playing the Ally Sheedy role in it, and the guy doing this was playing like the this is it.
This is the original video that started the meme.
So she's doing the Ally Sheedy thing, you know, coming around, and the...
Of course she would play that role, because she's a narcissist.
Okay, so that's what that came from. But the funny thing about that was that as these mashups started going around, where there was, like, different kids from around the country started doing these videos, Lawrence Lessig used it as an example for why we needed Creative Commons copywriting. And he actually did a video about it, including these clips, that was then forced to be taken down by the publisher of the Listomania music. And he went on to sue them and win. And it fundamentally altered the copyright dynamic online for all these memes. So there's so much. It was such a fail.
The Electronic Frontier Foundation should get behind AOC now after this.
Well, exactly. I mean, it's just one more reason why, like, your internet freedoms, in some way, she played a small part in our internet freedoms unknowingly. And it is.
Yeah, but she's ruining the Breakfast Club because that woman's white.
Exactly.
I'm so sick of it. It's like Ghostbusters, this.
Yeah, the weirdo in the Breakfast Club is white. She just is.
She just is.
And so AOC
this is great.
Tweeted this out today.
I love also that she's a troll in addition to everything else.
She's
it's
the
amazing.
First representative who's good at posting, and it's
beautiful.
So bizarre and exciting.
That's so really she just
good.
Dropped this like
this
20
awesome.
Minutes ago in response to the failure to... I don't know what they were supposed to do, but here it is. Play this. It's pretty funny. She just danced outside of her
owned.
Office.
That's good, pretty good. Better song choice, too.
That also, I mean...
Well, but you know what they're going to do? They're going to take that. They're going to pull the music out and
they're gonna
put in
put,
that. Like,
they're gonna, no, they're going to put. They're going to put Shakira She-Wolf over it.
All right. Well, that is. I don't know.
My first response to that was honestly like I was sad for the person. I was like, "Has this person ever been outside? Do they have any friends? Like, how warped do you have to be to think that this is damaging?"
He literally mentions digital phrenology in his bio, so it's
probably
a
not.
No,
I'm guessing probably not.
All right. Well, let's get on to some news that took place. Now, look, we've talked about this all week. The bills that the Democrats in the House pass do nothing except for set a marker and establish a baseline, we hope, for what they'll do if they get the Senate as well. But it also does create, what they do in the House also does create a tremendous amount of pressure on the Republicans in the Senate who are running for re-election. So yesterday, the Democrats passed two pieces of legislation. One was the essentially the funding bill, the continuing resolution that they got from the Senate, last year's Senate. And that goes back to the Senate. And Mitch McConnell is saying that he will not bring up a vote. However, in the past, like 24 hours, Cory Gardner, Susan Collins, Capito from West Virginia, others who are basically starting to worry, even Joni Ernst, who are starting to worry about their reelection in 2020, are getting nervous because, you know, we're still in that zone. There has been already a tremendous amount of needless suffering and anxiety experienced by over 800,000 federal workers and contractors, some of whom may expect never to see the money from the work myths, others who will build up debt in anticipation of getting back pay for this. We've also seen a freeze in federal workers' pay raise of 1% or 2% that they were supposed to get. And it also debilitates the ability of these agencies to look forward past, you know, the next couple of weeks and actually do any real planning. But as the weeks go by, the suffering is going to increase exponentially. You're going to start to see people on food stamps lose their funding, perhaps as early as early February. You're going to see people lose their Section 8 housing. You're going to see people, farmers, lose their ability to get loans and to get funding and to get the slush fund payments that they were supposed to get for the tariffs. That's why Joni Ernst is a little bit worried. And so this pressure is going to increase. And Nancy Pelosi, to her credit, understands this dynamic apparently far more so than Donald Trump. And Mitch McConnell is just sitting there hoping some deal can be struck. Here is Nancy Pelosi coming out and talking to reporters and explaining essentially what the dynamic is right now.
The fact is, a wall is an immorality. It's not who we are as a nation. And this is not a wall between Mexico and the United States that the president is creating here. It's a wall between reality and his constituents, his supporters. He does not want them to know what he's doing to Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security in his budget proposal. He does not want them to know what he's doing to clean air and clean water and the rest in his Department of Interior and of EPA. He does not want them to know how he is hurting them, so he keeps the subject on the wall. He's a master of diversion. We're trying to open up government. We're giving him a mature path to do so.
All right. And I'll tell you what was skilled about that. Everything, the message she wanted to get across was bookmarked with the wall, because she knows the press is only going to cover stuff that has the word wall in it, because that is the society we live in. We all participate in it when we buy products that are advertised on television and whatnot. That's just the way it is. We're just going to have to wait until basically the boomers and the Gen Xers die off and the world can be owned by millennials who will just watch stuff on YouTube. And but that is the world in which we're living in. So that is the dynamic right now with the government shutdown. It would be fascinating to watch how the Senate's going to crumble and what they're going to come up with. Because I think there's a decent chance what we may end up seeing is some type of compromise where, and I, again, you know, we said this last year around this time, I would take a permanent fix for all the DACA folks and DAPA, but even just DACA, frankly, to start with, for $2.5-5 billion worth of wall. Who cares? That wall's not going to get built. There's just $5 billion isn't going to do it. Trump needs to bring that back to his base to pretend that the wall is being built. Fine. Give him the $5 billion, take DACA, and say, what happened to Mexico?
I'd like to also add the protected status for Haitians as well. which was a really obscene. Well, I mean, I just want to put that on the table as something that would be a great thing to add. I know it's not necessarily possible, but let's try to add as many marks.
Broadly, the point being, yes. I mean, if you were to deal with all those people.
Trade fake things for real things.
Yes, exactly.
I agree.
Exactly. Because no one, I mean, for
except
him,
the part that goes through a butterfly sanctuary. We can't allow that to happen.
But
that's
the thing.
Up.
It's none of it's going to go through anything. This $5 billion they're going to end up spending on just like, you know, architecture firms.
We're going to spend it on my trip to Mexico where they pay me the rest of it and thank me.
But every day that passes, the Democrats get more leverage here. And, the problem is, of course, is that the Democrats, broadly speaking, in general, feel more pressure just broadly. You know, if you're in Joni Ernst and you come from Iowa and you're worried about the farmers, you're worried about all the stories about the farmers who are getting screwed over because they're not getting their slush fund payments and they can't get loans and farms are starting to go bankrupt because of this. You're going to feel that pressure directly. But even if you're not, if you're a Democrat and you're not, your district is not completely implicated by, you don't have that many federal workers or you don't have any, specific things, that many SNAP recipients. The bottom line is the broad force of your constituents are concerned about government being shut down, even if it doesn't directly implicate them in a way that Republicans aren't. So there's a little asymmetry there. But once these real things start kicking in, the Senate's going to crack. And they're going to go to Mitch McConnell and they're going to go like, I'm not giving up my Senate seat because of Donald Trump. And I'm not going to give it up in February of 2019. So we shall see what happens. Meanwhile, Democrats passed another piece of legislation, and that is the For the People Act. This is a great piece of legislation, as far as I'm concerned, both from the perspective of it's good policy and it's good politics. And one of the things that we were talking about, you know, as the Democrats take over the House, was they need to start passing things that also help them maintain power. But and it just so happens that there's a cross section in that Venn diagram of things that are help keep them maintain power and also are based on democratic values and just simply justice. And that, of course, is voting reform. So the bill includes a requirement that all states automatically register voters who submit paperwork to a state government agency unless the person opts out. So that's, motor voter registration. That is, it expands it, whatever business you would have with the state. Medicaid, anything. Good stuff. Provide same-day voter registration in every state. Allow 15 days of early voting with sites located near public transportation. Use nonpartisan redistricting commissions to draw new congressional maps. This is like the whole thing that Greg Sargent, I think, called for the other day. Enable online voter registration. Count provisional ballots from eligible voters filed at wrong polling place and use paper ballots in addition to electronic voting systems. It would ban post-release felon disenfranchisement. So that's 5 million Americans would regain their voting rights. Bill, however, would still allow states to disenfranchise people while they're in prison. States would be banned from engaging in voter caging, which is that stuff like cross-check. It would be impermissible for states to remove someone from the voting rolls for failing to vote in a previous election, which is often used. If you haven't voted in the past election, you got a letter and you didn't return it, you get kicked off the rolls. Election Day would be a federal holiday for 2 million plus federal workers and non-government employers would be encouraged to give the day off to private sector employees. That doesn't go far enough in my mind. It should be a national holiday, but Colleges and universities would be designated as voter registration agencies. Absentee ballots would no longer require postage, so you wouldn't get votes thrown out or be any more difficult to vote that way. It would increase funding to help states update and secure election infrastructure. The Election Assistance Commission would oversee these updates and mandated reports on its progress, so we get a sense of what's going on around the country. The election systems would be deemed critical infrastructure. It went on to say to resolve some declarations and findings, which will basically be the premise for future legislation that will be introduced soon, including fixing the Voting Rights Act, Section 5. We've been talking about this for years since the Supreme Court rolled it back in 2013. That Representative Terry Sewell from Alabama will introduce this legislation, which will move on a separate track during the committees. There's also the bill also asserts support for statehood for District of Columbia, protects Native American voting rights, and the right to vote in U.S. territories. It also addresses campaign finance reform. And this is the most interesting part. It creates a public financing system for House elections that provides $6 in public funds for every $1 in funds raised from donations up to $200. So do people understand that? Now, New York City has a very similar program. In fact, that reminds me, Nomiki Kantz is running for public advocate. In the next 8 days, I think it is, your donation of up to, I think it is, $250 will be matched by the city by 8 times. So if you donate 10 bucks to her or 25 bucks to her, if you donate 10 bucks to her, it's going to be worth 80. If you vote $100, it's going to be worth $800 to her. And I believe this goes until the next 8 days. So we've got a link at majority.fm to her site. Go and do that. No pitch for membership today. Just go do that. But aside from that, the New York City one is a great program, and this would be great to have nationally. In addition, it also includes the Disclose Act, which mandates that nonprofits and other groups disclose their sources when they contribute to election campaigns. A lot of these 503C ones now that purport to be nonpartisan, this is the way that they get dark money into campaigns. The package Honest Ads Act requires the disclosure of digital political ads on tech platforms. The FEC would be reconfigured from 6 members to 5 to prevent deadlocks on important issues. Because more often than not, they deadlock and nothing happens. Coordination between super PACs and candidates would be more clearly defined and banned. There's also assertions and findings that would implicate future legislation, including a declaration that the Constitution should be amended to overturn not just Citizens United, but also Buckley v. Valeo. The bill states an intent to ban anonymous shell companies from funding campaigns to prevent the potential for secret foreign money to seep into elections. And then there's some ethics reforms as well. And the Supreme Court would be covered under that ethics code. So Ginny Thomas might have to find a different job rather than being a conduit to her husband and right-wing money. So this is all good stuff. And here is Nancy Pelosi basically gaveling in and expressing what they intend to deal with in the democratically controlled Congress.
This Congress must accelerate a future that advances America's preeminence in the world and opens up opportunities for all. Building an economy that gives all Americans the tools they need to succeed in the 21st century. Public education, workforce development, good-paying jobs, and secure pensions. We have heard from too many families who wonder in this time of innovation and globalization if they have a place in the economy of the future. We must remove all doubt that they do and say to them individually, we will have an economy that works for you. Let us declare that we will call upon bold thinking to address the disparity of income in America, which is at the root of the crisis of confidence felt by so many Americans. As Justice Brandeis said, we may have democracy, or we may have wealth concentrated in the hands of the few, but we cannot have both. We must end that injustice and restore the public's faith in a better future for themselves and their children.
There you have it. So that is day one for the Democrats in the House. One other story before we go to the callers. There was an important ruling. This happened, I guess, actually on the 28th, a couple of days ago. And again, the implications of elections are, you know, go far, much further, I think, than we anticipate. And some of the most important dynamics that implicate policy and affect the real lives of people happen at a surface that is, you know, below the surface in a way that we can't see. And this is this story sort of like combines a couple of things that I don't think people think about enough. So in 2015, the National Labor Relations Board, which had a majority of democratically appointed commissioners because Barack Obama was the president, and they have 5-year terms, and unions have a lot more sway over a Democratic president, even if he never put his walking shoes on and walked with them in Wisconsin, which was a huge disappointment. But unions have much more sway over a Democratic president than they do over a Republican president. And so those commissioners were very pro-labor. And in a pretty dramatic ruling in 2015, the NLRB ruled that companies and franchisors with both indirect and direct control of employees could be held liable for labor violations committed by contractors or franchisees. So what does that mean? It means that the McDonald's in Canton, Ohio, owned by Brendan, can be held that not only can Brendan be held liable for punishing people who go out on strike or for wage theft, but McDonald's headquarters can too, because McDonald's has enough control over what that franchisee does, even though he's the owner. They set the prices. They set a lot of the standards. They have enough control that they are considered joint employers. This particular case was centered on a business called Browning Ferris in California, which is a recycling company. And they contract with another company to provide workers to sort and clean the recycled products. So in 2013, a union petitioned the National Labor Relations Board to represent these contractor workers, not Browning Ferris, but the other company, Lead Point. But also Browning Ferris was named as a joint employer. So this is what these companies do. They hire basically temp agencies so that they don't have the responsibility, the labor responsibility for these people. And the National Labor Relations Board said, no, you can't get away with that. The Trump administration and is obviously against that ruling, has tried to reverse it, can't on its own. They were taken to court Well, the D.C. Circuit Court, a panel of three judges, just ruled 2-1 in favor of the National Labor Relations Board's ability and responsibility to hold employers in that situation as jointly liable for labor violations, et cetera, et cetera. And there's two things you should know about this. One is the Trump National Labor Relations Board cannot reverse this. In fact, they have a responsibility, a statutory responsibility, to rule in this way. And so there is legal leverage anytime they don't going forward. But two, the judges, the 2-1 decision in this panel of judges were appointed by Obama. The reason why they were able to appoint these judges, and if it goes to the entire en banc, as they say, of the D.C. Circuit Court, the reason why they will lose there, too, is because Harry Reid got rid of the filibuster when Republicans were refusing to seat more judges on that court. It was 4-4. They wouldn't seat the other three judges. It's supposed to have 11 members. They said, that's 8 is plenty. This is the most important court, and we've talked about this court a lot. This is one of the most important courts after the Supreme Court. No, this is the most important court in the country after the Supreme Court. And in some ways, it's more important because it deals with a lot more cases. And the reason why this is going to stand for labor is because a Democrat with whom I had many, many policy disagreements was there. So in that Canton, Ohio McDonald's, they're going to be subject to wage increases, or they're not going to be able to punish their workers for going out on strike, like Fight for 15. There's going to be a lot of justice for workers because of this. Now, it's possible it could go to the Supreme Court, and we now have a Republican-controlled Supreme Court. It's conceivable they'll overturn it, but I imagine if that happens, it won't happen for a couple of years. And who knows? But these are the implications of all of these things that happened years ago that will have implications going years forward. And it's important to be aware of, like, you know, much of the governing that happens on this level. And, you know, unless you read the National Law Review, you're not going to see it. Or I guess The Intercept also reported on it. Rachel Cohen did. All right, let's go to the phones, shall we? You're calling from a 210 area code. Who's this?
Good afternoon, Sam. It's John from San Antonio.
John in San Antonio. You were in pole position twice in 2019 already. You going for some type of, like, a record?
No. I'm just interested to make my point here.
Okay. All right, fair enough.
Okay, yeah, I want to address some issues from my call on Wednesday. Yeah, I agree with Michael that when you're considering supporting a candidate, policy should be the main factor. You know, and Bernie put out a fundraising email on December 27 stating, if I'm the best candidate to beat Trump, then I'll probably run. This is one of the rare occasions where I disagree with Bernie, and it seems like a hedge because, you know, what is he basing this on? Is it on the assumption on the hypotheticals that, you know, because he's been slightly behind Biden for almost 2 years, and I don't think he's basing this on some kind of abstract feeling. And I encourage Bernie to run because he's had large leads against Trump, though not as large as Biden. And I want to express my disagreement with you about the reliability of long-term hypothetical polling. I'll acknowledge that the longer you go back, there's a decrease in the reliability of polls. But there are exceptions. You mentioned how Jeb was leading, and Michael mentioned how Lieberman was leading a couple months after the midterms. And I'm basing this on looking a month back for polling data based on an average of polls for the election that was taking place 22 months later, though Romney was actually beating Jeb at that point in 2015. The only other eventual nominees who did not have polling leads at this point in the 21st century were Obama and McCain in 2007. So the fact is that a majority of
major did you say the 21st century?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I mean, how many elections have there been in the 21st century?
Five. So in the 21st century, had polling leads at this point in the election.
Okay.
The ratio is, you know, 60% to 40%. So if you fast forward 6 months later, once Trump got in, he quickly had polling leads that replicated his leads that he had in April of 2011 when he was considered running, and he never relinquished that lead in 2015. And one of your greatest moments as an analyst is when you're on Hayes' show after Trump announced, and you said Trump will probably win the Republican primary. I think it's because of your dedication to your job. I believe you mentioned those leads from 2011 on this show, or at least remembered that they happened. And I'll admit that in 2003, after Lieberman did not run, Howard Dean had leads before Kerry took over, and the lead in January 2004, then he never relinquished that lead. And in January 2007, McCain and Obama had primary leads that spurred them to victory over Clinton and Giuliani, who had national leads through December 2007. The biggest roller coaster ride for polling was in the Republican primary of 2012, where right, you know, at this point, Romney did have a lead, but then, you know, Trump, Huckabee, Perry, Kane, and Gingrich all had leads before Romney took over in February of 2012. So, it's been 27 years since Bill Clinton, who was polling at 1%, won the nomination, and 43 years since Jimmy Carter achieved the same feat. The fact is historically, people who are in the middle or the back of the pack, even at this point, you know, rarely win the nomination of their party. You know, every nominee in the 21st century had polling or delegate leads by February of the year of the election. So do you want to comment on that, or do you want to
I mean,
I'd like to talk about...
All I can tell you is I don't have a strong comment on the validity of polls at this point. There are, I think the idea that in some instances they are accurate, in some instances they're not, in the context of the 21st century, I think indicates my contention that they're only somewhat reliable. But to that extent, if you think it's the case that Trump is the if you think the polling is that important, then all I can tell you is you look at the polls and it doesn't look like Trump can win. Right? Like it doesn't.
Yeah.
Like if you look at the polling, right? I'm looking at like the last NBC Wall Street Journal poll, and this was from, in December. Definitely Trump, 23%. Although a week later, it was actually 18%. Probably Trump, 18%. So that's 36% of the population that says either definitely or probably Trump. Definitely Democrat is like 38%. Probably Democrat is another 18%. I mean, another 14%. So you're already over 50% and a generic Democrat versus Trump. Now, but we don't know if it's going to be Trump. Trump could get hit by a bus. He could have a heart attack. He could eat a chicken bone. I mean, who knows?
I think the most important thing is maybe not the exact numbers, but the fact that there's no evidence that anyone would be substantially better than Bernie at beating Trump. So that's not an argument that folks make against him.
Let me pull a Sam Cedar.
That evidence,
that's what I said yesterday.
That's exactly what I said yesterday.
And now everyone takes my point.
I agree.
But that's me doing a Sam Cedar,
right.
Because that
evidence
is what I, Michael Brooks, said yesterday.
Well, there's some evidence that Bernie would be the best.
Don't reverse yourself now.
Trump, but there are also some compelling arguments that I'm sure I can't back up with statistics, but that just like make sense in a thought experiment.
I agree with,
Wait a second. No one is refuting that the polling, broadly speaking, maybe Biden pops up in one poll that's better, but broadly speaking, no one's refuting that.
I'm just trying to find some common ground.
I agree with Mike from PA. I got to say, if I am going to, and this is not based on polling, this is purely based on both substantive as well as stylistic arguments and instincts. The worst and the ones that I am scared of are Gillibrand, Booker, and Harris from a pure, in addition to having problems, a lot of problems them politically and ideologically. I think that I don't see them beating Trump necessarily. We could get to a point where anybody would beat Trump because it's such a disaster. But even this far out, those would be but those are the three. It's worth noting. I have a huge question mark about their capacity to do what needs to be done to actually win a general election.
Well, this is
the beauty
is that a primary, gives you actually a sense of like how they actually will be as a candidate.
Well, sure.
I don't know.
We're still laying markers.
I think
down.
It would be much harder for Bernie Sanders to win the primary than the general election.
Interesting. John, thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
John seems like he knows some type of inside joke.
John pulls up from the top of the key. I like how he also butters. He smacks you around. And he butters you up.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I like it.
You were wrong, but you were also right.
It was a great moment you had on Hayes. Your analysis of polls is pathetic.
650 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Hello? Hello? Is it me?
Yeah, it is. Can you hear me?
Oh, okay. Jack from Palo Alto.
Jack from Palo Alto. What's going on?
Sorry, guys.
No problem.
First time caller. I listen to you guys every day. I used to watch Fox News for an hour and MSNBC for an hour, and that was just torture on me.
Why did you do that to yourself?
Because I try to be, get both sides of it.
Ah, okay. Well, good for you.
And inform myself, and then I found you guys, and I just wanted to call and say Happy New Year, and thanks so much for informing me and being funny as well. And I really had a question for you guys. What do you think of PAYGO?
Well, I think PAYGO is bad. And I think, there's a statutory requirement from PAYGO, which I think it would take the Senate and the House to overturn. But there's also just sort of a secondary sort of like House rule, which I think there's some belief out there that if you were to get rid of the House rule, okay, so there's two different things. One is there's a law that was passed by Congress and by the Senate, and then there is sort of a directive, if you will, that the House can't, the House rules. I mean, it doesn't have the same force of law. It's just by what Congress needs to operate under at the, as decided at the beginning of the year, just by Congress, right? Because something to become a law, it needs to be passed by the House and the Senate and then signed by the president. And I think it would have been a good sign for the House to have gotten rid of that, so that they, at the very least, are publicly declaring that it is unnecessary to have stuff be deficit neutral when you pass this agenda. Now, there was an argument that you can waive this, or there's going to be an attempt to get rid of it after the fact. That's all well and good, but so I was a little disappointed by that. But I guess from what I've seen in terms of the reporting, the Progressive Caucus decided that there were bigger fish to fry. But in general, it's a bad idea. I mean, look, there's two different ways you can look at this. You can look at this that deficit spending is specifically required in times of a slow economic activity. And you can also look at it as deficit spending is completely irrelevant because of the nature of our monetary system. And under either one of those perspectives, PAYGO is silly. And it's also silly from a political standpoint. So, because I just don't think there's that much of a constituency out there that are looking for their legislation to be value, you know, revenue, deficit neutral. I just think go ahead.
I just saw also another question. How many times did the Republicans have to be slapped in the face with Donald Trump's ineptitude before they actually realized that supporting him will damage their party? And I hate Republicans. I have Republicans in my family. The reason why I had to watch Fox is because I had to get their talking points and know how to debate them at the family table. Because with a disability, you know, my housing situation is a little bit iffy, and I require, you know, managing stuff with my family and not getting into complete another argument. So,
well, you have my you have my sympathies that you're
how many times do we have to hit him in the face?
I can tell you what that number is. It's called infinity. We will never get there. There will never be a moment where they go, "Hey, wait a second, this guy seems to be a bit of a jerk and clueless." That's not going to happen. So all I can tell you is, hang in there and have fun at those family meals. Remember, you know, there's a lot of other things to recommend your family aside from politics.
Oh, absolutely. I tell them to watch you guys and, you know, check you guys out all the time. And I feel like they, you know, some of them have started to, because they go, "Wow, you're so you seem to know everything. You seem to be so ahead on these issues." I go, "Yeah, you should check out the Majority Report." So you guys have a great day.
Thank you.
Tell everyone in the studio I say what's up. Anyways.
Thanks, man.
See ya.
All right, appreciate it. Jack from Palo Alto. Calling from a 510 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Is that me?
Yeah, it is you.
Oh, hi, Sam. This is Isha from Indiana.
Hi, Isha.
Listening to you guys. I'm good. I've been listening to you guys for a few months now. I love you guys. Just wanted to, I guess, call in to kind of a little bit defend Tulsi Gabbard.
Okay.
Because she did vote against the PAYGO provision.
She did.
During the House vote last night. And also, I think, in general, regarding India, I know Michael had mentioned being anti-imperialist on all fronts, not just against American imperialism. And I think, like, a forgotten aspect of India is that it has experienced hundreds of years of Islamic imperialism with the Mughal dynasty. So, and, like, a lot of leftists in India want to learn about politics and, like, political ideology from the West and kind of map that over. And it doesn't map over as neatly and easily. So I feel like a lot of people in the West are a little, I want to say, maybe misguided about where people are coming from when they talk about, like, religious minority issues in India.
Can I just say, okay, so I understand, like, in the grand sweep of history that might be true, like, in a very long-term sense. But in the last, say, like, just postmodern independence, and at least what I'm responding to, is, let's get really specific. When Modi was head of Gujarat state, like, the right, he was essentially the, I don't forget the title, but he was governor, right, would be like the analogy.
Mm-hmm.
There was a two-day, mass murder of Muslims, like, and Christians as well. Now, there's disputes of, like, what was the precipitating event? And there's a dispute basically of whether Modi actually ordered and was part of literally like orchestrating mass murder, or whether he just simply totally stood by and watched it and let it happen. Now, in the 80s, the Congress party stood by while Sikhs were murdered after the assassination of Indira Gandhi. So I get that there's a history for that too. But that being said, this guy was banned from visiting the United States. And, you know, in the United States, it was not because of the Muslims. It was because of Christians, right? Like, this guy is directly a participant in a serious crime against humanity. And that sense of Hindu far-right politics, I understand what it criticizes with a Western-centric perspective. But it also negates, like, if you read, I'm very influenced by Amartya Sen. He wrote in The Argumentative Indian about the history of Indian pluralism and Indian Hindu, Buddhist, and Muslim tradition. The Hindu right, like every other right-wing fascist movement, invents a history that excludes others and is chauvinist, exclusionary. Right, so she supports that. I can't get with that. And it tracks with Syria. It tracks with Israel. It tracks with her refugee stance. Like, that's why it matters to me. I think it's something to get into, and there's subtle points to be made for sure. But there's big macro takeaways that make her a big problem.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. Like, I don't think she should have, like, blanket support for Modi. I don't either, even though a lot of people around me do. I mean, there's definitely, like, you can have a more nuanced criticism. Like, he's doing good in some like sociocultural ways, but he's also pushing like a neoliberal agenda behind the scenes, obviously. So yeah, like I get that there's nuance to it, but I guess like the left is just really
the
hard on her when
Gujarat,
sometimes.
Can but I, wait a second, but wait,
can
wait.
We just talk. Just hold I on. Gotta say specifically that he was complicit in the mass murder of several thousand people in 2 days, including like we're talking like cutting uteruses off of pregnant women's stomachs. Like,
but I mean, how was he complicit?
He didn't order the security forces to stop it from happening at the least. And that's the most benign interpretation. There's credible reports that he instigated it and called for it in his rhetoric. And people close to him in his government have been arrested and charged on it.
Well, look, here's the bottom line. I am glad that she is providing a vote in situations like the PAYGO thing. And I think that's helpful. I just think to the extent that we push back on these things, it's not so much that she's not right to be a congresswoman from Hawaii. It's that there is stuff that's going on, and she has a good record on some other things, too. I'm not so excited about her sort of full-throated, what comes off to me is full-throated endorsement of Assad in Syria. It's one thing to say we shouldn't be there, but it's another thing to say we shouldn't be there because we don't have the ability to have a good outcome, as opposed to, like, Assad is, just a guy who loves his people.
Right.
And so... The issue, I think, for us is less that she shouldn't be a congresswoman from Hawaii. It's that the deification of her is unwarranted and is dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where it comes from. But I'm sorry. What was your name again? Isha.
Isha.
Yeah. All right. Well, Isha, thanks so much for the phone call. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, Sam.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Michael.
Thank you so much. Please call back. I want to do more and learn more about it for sure. And obviously, I'll be doing more of this on my show.
Calling from a 405 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Hey, I'm Gregory from Oklahoma.
Gregory from Oklahoma.
There he is.
Long time no talk to.
Yeah, been a bit.
What's going on?
Oh, everything and nothing. Let's see here. Last time we talked was like April of last year. Okay, so let me start. I have a lot to say. I'll try to keep it short, but there's a lot here. Let me see here.
Well, Gregory, don't make this like everything since last April. All right, like just like
no.
Okay,
it's highlights. It's
since highlights,
say November.
Like, okay, so I became really depressed last year. A lot of bad stuff happened. Like, my parents got divorced or are getting divorced.
Well,
I'm
sorry to hear that.
Yeah, a lot of things. yeah, a lot of things in my personal life kind of got, you know, out of whack. And so I had to deal with that. And let's see here. Had some issues with politics going on in my state. Not looking very good here in Oklahoma. Although, one thing I am proud about, which you guys didn't really talk about, is we finally have our congressman from Oklahoma who's a Democrat, and it's from my district, Oklahoma's 5th District.
Oh, that's good.
Ken Moore. Yeah, it's a really good. She's a beacon of hope for Democrats here in Oklahoma because we were, like, really disappointed that our gubernatorial candidate lost to a Trump mini-me. So, you know, education and healthcare is going to keep going to shit here in the state.
I'm sorry to hear that.
And, yeah, so, something else I was going to say. Can't remember what it was. Oh, I've had a revelation about Jimmy Dore.
Oh, all right.
So,
well, wait a second. Now I just perked up.
The rest of us happened. In the studio were concerned about your well-being, Greg. But now you have Sam's attention.
Right. Well, I've got a comment on your parents' split, but let's hear what you have to say about Jimmy Dore first.
During around August, September, that's like my depression was real, like, bad.
Right, and that's when you tuned into Jimmy.
I stopped following politics a little bit. I even stopped watching Majority Report. But I remember watching a Jimmy Dore video where he criticized AOC for endorsing Andrew Cuomo right after the primary.
Right.
And after that, I kind of started thinking a little bit more about Jimmy Dore and how he doesn't really, like, me and him, we might be both progressive. I mean, I think I'm more to the left of him, but for me, I support the Democratic Party, and I want to change the Democratic Party. He doesn't really care about that. And me watching his videos kind of, like, you know, made me feel, like, weird about watching his videos and also being a person who's trying to change the Democratic Party. I kind of feel like, in a way, he's childish towards that idea.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, even if we don't change the Democratic Party, it's still better to have them in power than, you know, not.
Right. Well, but, Gregory, sounds to me like you are doing great. You have clarity.
A fact check. She did not officially endorse Cuomo. She gave an anodyne answer to an interview question where she was like, I support all the Democrats.
Right, right, right.
Exactly.
People made a mountain out of the hill.
She danced a video for Cuomo because she loves him so much.
Yeah.
During last summer, I joined DSA.
Oh, good for you.
Nice. Hell yeah.
Awesome, Greg.
Hell yeah.
Greg, everything sounds like it's going well for you. I can tell you this about the breakup of your parents. Having both had my parents split and being part of a split, I can tell you that it gets better, with some time. I know it's difficult.
Very difficult. Yeah. So difficult. I'll be 21 next month.
Uh-huh.
And then, like, their anniversary is, like, right after my birthday. So, like, it's, like, just awful. Because, like, I'm not going
to
get into that.
Well,
but, yeah.
Let's not get into it too deeply. But I can just tell you this. Like, you know, you got to – they're people. They deserve happiness going forward. You are all going to be happier. You're still a family. It's just you're structured a little bit differently. And so – you know, your parents still love you. So that's the important part. And you've joined DSA. You got that going for you. And you've realized that Jimmy Dore is not worth watching. And so as far as I can tell, buddy, you're doing good. So hang in there.
Oh. All right. Thanks.
Thanks.
Keep doing what you're doing, guys.
Thanks, Greg.
Take care, Greg. Good luck, man.
Greg from Oklahoma. There you go.
That's one of those guys that you're talking about. Was that billionaire that should homestead leftists? Should
yeah.
Get a nice subsidy.
Exactly.
Yeah, Greg should
fight
get
the good
subsidy.
Fight in Oklahoma.
Exactly.
Calling from 267 area code. Yeah. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Hello?
Hello?
Oh, hi. Hi, this is Stan from Philadelphia.
Stan from Philadelphia.
Nice to talk to you.
Happy New Year.
I would bring up two things. One, a really quick story, is that like I was encouraged by Mike and Kyle Kalinske to call my representative or a representative after that whole vote in Congress to about Yemen, trying to pull us out. Yeah. So I had followed their advice, and you know I'd never done it before. I had you know called my representative. I was really so. I mean, I called, but I didn't. No one told me that anyone would actually answer. I thought it was gonna be like an answering machine. That like I was gonna rant, you know,
right,
and really let them know how I was very unhappy. But no, someone actually answered. And it's very different to do something like that when there's like a nice staffer who's politely answering your questions.
Right.
you know, Kyle was saying like, you know, like they're the genocide caucus, I think. What was his name for them? And so, yeah, it's I mean, it's an empowering a moment and to actually call your representative. It's something you've been encouraging yourself.
Yeah.
Many times before.
And I would say, look, you know, the bottom line is, look, they these people are they're normal people. I mean, in the sense that they react to things like people normally do. And so if you call and you sound like a responsible, you know, calm individual, it's going to have, you know, more weight. I mean, at the end of the day, it's just a number. But if, you know, there's no doubt in my mind that these staffers get off the phone and they go, whoa, you know, they'll take it down. They'll put you in the computer and they'll say one call, and that call is worth, they have an algorithm. I don't know what it is these days. I would imagine, you know, I don't know what it is, but it you represent 100, maybe 200, maybe 500 people in the district, that one call. And on top of it, when you get off the phone, you know, when they're done answering the phones at the end of the day, there's no doubt in my mind, they go into the chief of staff and they're like, how do these callers sound? And if that person says, sound like very rational people, that implicates their thinking on this. I mean, it just does. I don't know that it's going to change anybody's mind, but it does. And so, you know, it's all sort of the same theory as that Clean for Gene movement. You know, fortunately, society has changed in such a way that you don't always have to wear a suit to look like a responsible individual. But
thank God.
Yeah. But appreciate your calling us. And
well,
your...
I was also going to talk about the Guatemalan child who died.
Uh-huh.
So the big I believe it was Democracy Now who brought up the fact that you know she was an indigenous family. And how her whole tribe was uplifted uprooted by like U.S. and Western extraction policies, and how they actually had to bounce around their tribe to escape this extractive policies that we've been implementing
right
on their land, right? And then from there, it's kind of like a direct line also with the violence that we've spread in Central America, whether through our drug policy or through our disruptive practices, right? And all of these things, you know, have pushed their family, right, to force them to emigrate to us, right? And then the idea that it's simply a choice, right? You know, Kristen Gillibrand gets on Fox News and says, you know, this is a choice they made to come.
Not Kristen Gillibrand. Sorry? Kristen Nielsen.
Oh, Kristen Nielsen. Yeah. Thank you. Sorry about that. Come to the border to take on this dangerous trek, and then she dies. And I think there's a direct line of thinking in this conservative mindset that relates back also to your call with that libertarian gentleman. I forget his name. But he had said something about how, you know, it was wrong for the North to demand that slaves be released, right? And how it's so easy to sacrifice bodies, right? The bodies of black and brown people, and that, like, well, we should have gotten in some sort of dialogue with Southern slave owners, right? And then to convince them to release their slaves, or wait for market forces to allow that to happen. Meanwhile, generations of black people would have been born and died in slavery under that brutal system, but it's just okay, you know? I'm realizing there's like this spectrum, this long tradition in the conservative mindset that simply sacrifices these bodies white profit or just white comfort.
Yeah. You could also just say that there's a lot of racist principles in the way that they operate. Appreciate the call, Stan. The
three of the children that have died at the border were all indigenous and spoke indigenous languages.
Right. And, you can also see it in terms of like sort of these, there is some type of, a lot of it also just sort of comes from this sort of conservative mindset that it's quasi-religious, that like if you found yourself in a bad situation, it is because in some way you deserve it. And whether it's like poverty or whatnot, and of course, but you know, I just saw this story today, we don't have the clip of it, but in Britain, there was a headline, something to the effect of like, you know, judge says drug dealers can get off because their texts that they wrote had such great grammar. And it was like the whitest defendants you could ever find, right? Wow. I mean, that is...
good day, sir. Where might that kilo be procured?
Well, and then it also turned out that their grammar was actually atrocious. That's the other benefit you get.
It's not what they meant by grammar.
Yeah.
They had great grammar.
Oh, wait, that's the great wrong grammar. Sound sheet. Where's
everyone
my correct
had
sound sheet? Here it is.
Great grammar.
Couple of clips. Oh, this clip I actually found pretty touching. For the first time, a Native American woman was elected to Congress. And in fact, it just so happens we have two this year. First is Deb Haaland.
Holland.
Who was it on this program I interviewed her for?
Yeah, that was in...
At Netroots Nation. And the second is Charisse Davids. Davids is an attorney and a former mixed martial arts fighter. She's a member of the Ho-Chunk Nation. She's also the first openly LGBTQ member of Congress from her state. Holland is a member of the Laguna Pueblo. She's an attorney, and she once served as their state's Democratic Party chair. Here are the two of them hugging. It's pretty touching.
Congratulations, you are now all members of the 100.
That's very sweet.
Bad grammar. Bad grammar.
Meanwhile, really enjoying this incoming class of
I'm a big
congressman.
See, I, of course, AOC is great, but I've been going strong in the, like, let's always include Rashida Tlaib in our shout-outs, and
she's like the Damian Lillard to the Steph Curry.
Yes, and just the class rage, the energy. I love it.
Yeah.
And she is someone who's going to need a lot of support in her next election because she got in there. It was a bit of a surprise, I think. And they're going to be going for, I mean, they're going to gun for AOC, but that I good luck with that. I think they're going to have a tough time unseating her. But Rashida Tlaib, she's but she is not. It does not appear that that understanding that she's going to have to fight very hard for her reelection is in any way inhibiting her expression as a congresswoman. She is, I'm not sure from where in Michigan she's from. I imagine close to Detroit, I think it is, right?
She was endorsed by the Detroit DSA.
There you go.
That makes me think she's from near there.
She was...
She's a Conyers old district, yeah.
So there was a, I guess, a function for MoveOn.org. Here she is speaking about what she hopes will happen to Donald Trump.
People love you, and you win. Woo! And when your son looks at you and says, Mama, look, you won, bullies don't win. And no. I said, baby, they don't, because we're going to go in there, we're going to impeach the motherfucker.
See?
Wow. They're posting, they're swearing. Can't congresswomen do nowadays?
I also like how I've all the political skepticism of the impeachment that you have, and then it's like, oh, that was the best impeachment case I've ever heard.
Right.
Exactly.
Now,
if it's articulated like that, then I totally support this effort.
I hope the right wing manages to put that to music. And so they think so they could attack her, right?
Oh, there's tons of outrage.
Can you breathe the mouth on Rashida?
Well, I mean, it's like, okay, the first is the obvious with regards to Trump, but even on a smaller level, and I don't care. I think the best thing about Tom Perez is his swearing, but like Tom Perez been out there talking about people not caring.
Yeah. Some norms are bad and don't need to be respected.
Oh, that's a good point. She scarred her son is like a Palestinian American, so he's had a super easy life. Right. Yeah, never dealt with any kind of challenge. And to hear his mom say the F word about this grotesque monster that runs our country must have been really upsetting.
Yeah, that makes me a little bit nervous.
Yeah.
And even Congress people that I'm not necessarily a fan of are at least saying the right things. Here's Representative Adam Schiff. I don't have strong feelings about Schiff one way or another. I'm not. I think his voting record is fairly decent, not great. But here is Chris Hayes. Well, let me put it this way. This is a good measure of where the Democrats are today, as opposed to less than a decade ago. Here is Chris Hayes interviewing Adam Schiff.
There's a broader question. It's a question I want to ask all of Democratic leadership. We're living right now through this era of a kind of both polarization, institutional norms, finding, and I think maximalism increasingly be employed tactically, legislatively. Okay. One of the big victories of Republican Congress when they got the majority in 2010 was they used the debt ceiling default as a kind of threat to get an austerity legislation passed. It worked. It was incredibly reckless. It was unprecedented nearly. What is your personal theory of your wielding of power and your respect for norms balanced against imperatives to deal with what you're dealing with?
Well, I think we need to get back to operating rationally and civilly. We have to stop holding the government and all of its employees and contractors hostage when you can't get the votes for your priority, whether it's a wall or anything else. So we need to get back to some rational order. We don't want to repeat the mistakes, the excesses, the over, you know, zealous partisanship of the Republicans.
I hear that all the time. But what if that's the way the world works now? What if you cannot unilaterally put Humpty Dumpty back together?
You know, I don't accept it and I can't accept it. I think, you know, we fight hard and we fight tough and smart for our priorities. But we also recognize there's something bigger than us, that we're going to come and go in this beautiful building behind us. And we have an obligation to the entire country and to its institutions. Right now, this is the most precarious time in my lifetime in terms of our republic. We have a president who denigrates the freedom of the press, who goes after the independence of the judiciary, and in so many ways, I think, is threatening the livelihood of our democracy. The answer to that cannot be more of the same. That just drags us all down.
Congressman Adam Schiff, the new chair of...
Now, the part that I'm, I guess, hanging my hat on some level, is that his criticism of breaching of norms were all of the Republicans. I don't expect this guy to get out there and say we're going to impeach the MF-er. But I do think that there is an awareness there that they cannot allow. And we saw it in the context of the rules that they passed, where the Gephardt rule, for instance, where there is no longer a separate vote on extending the debt ceiling or raising the debt ceiling. Stuff like this, where they used to do because we wanted to make, you know, the process fluid and want to give people opportunity. Like, they're basically saying, like, look, we're done playing those type of games. Now, I don't know how long that lasts. And I can understand why Schiff, you know, is not using the same sort of partisan language that we see from others, because he could very well be the guy who is presenting the most amount of evidence in that impeachment trial, frankly.
What if Schiff can sort of work as our Jeff Flake, where he just acts like as if this is, we're returning to normal order, but meanwhile the grounds underneath him are swelling to like massive progressive action?
See, that's what I've always wanted too. That's like the guy, like the person who runs like a Clinton or Tony Blair campaign and then just like governs like Corbyn or Sanders, but is always like, this mass reappropriation of housing to give to homeless people, that's a public-private partnership. This is the third way.
Exactly. Well, that's my plan for the libertarian debate, for the presidential debate that I'm going to be attending.
I saw somebody
libertarian.
Somebody on my Discord. Yeah, Social Security libertarians, definitely third way. And somebody on my Discord, I think, said, what do you think about as a you know, an offering? Because if we're being honest, clearly you're not sort of you're on the center of the Libertarian Party.
I am in the radical center of the Libertarian
precisely,
Party.
Precisely. And to appeal to a grand coalition, what about Block as a running mate?
I mean, I would contemplate it.
Yeah, maybe Walter
float
Block.
It.
Yeah, let's float Walter Block. Wow, that's a fascinating proposal. What are your views on age of consent? I'm just spitballing. Could have been anything. Are you Jewish?
Should the federal government be in that business?
Should it really be in that business? Too wrong.
Sam, have you ever played chess? Have you ever played chess?
13. Ah, Invidious Reductum Dei.
Oh, my God.
Preagus.
This was interesting. AOC was on Anderson Cooper. We're not going to play the video because CBS is very uptight about that. But we will play the audio. And it's interesting. Like, this is just an example. Because Brenda and I were listening to this beforehand. And it struck me there was two options that that AOC had in answering this question. And both are worthwhile, but it's interesting construction. But, you know, let's just listen. This is Anderson Cooper giving her the, like, oh, Green New Deal. What planet are you from? Type of questioning. Because they get very nervous with anything that is left of center.
Well, isn't his mom like Gloria Vanderbilt, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it makes sense.
Yeah, or just, I mean, he doesn't even need, I mean, like, you know, Anderson Cooper's got a nice chunk of change himself. I mean, it is, the fear is not that they're going to, their wealth is going to be expropriated. The fear is just of like, there's just an uncomfortability, like, I think an inherent uncomfortability with any type of genuine leftist proposal. And this isn't even that radical, but that's the issue here.
You're talking about zero carbon emissions, no use of fossil fuels within 12 years?
That is the goal. It's ambitious. And
how is that possible? You're talking about everybody having to drive an electric car?
It's going to require a lot
Pause
of
it. Now, just think about this. Like, the idea, first of all, we are inundated with stories about self-driving cars, right? Like the idea that Anderson Cooper would say to someone like, self-driving cars in 12 years? He would never say that. Like, you know, technology, but the idea that we all have electric cars in 12 years, is that really that crazy of an idea?
Can't get out of the paradigm where everyone drives around in cars all the time.
Well, yes,
major change to our infrastructure.
You're totally right, Jamie, but that even undermines even more how ludicrous that is. Like, more people being in electric cars is like the easiest part by far of any, like the part that all business is on board with, the part that there's R&D on, the part that we valorize in every form of media with Tesla, like, it's just bizarre.
Right. That is like the most, like, yeah, no, like, I could say, like, well, yeah, maybe, certainly by 20 years. Anybody think that there's going to be, that we're not going to be driving all electric cars in 20 years?
And urban planning is going to be completely different.
I mean, what does he think? When Jerry Brown just signed all California's renewable, I think in 20 years, the target, what does he think that means? And Jerry Brown's like an august, respected, centrist, you know, governor. That's such a bizarre pull.
Now, if she had said, we're all going to be driving electric jetpacks, that would be crazy. No, but go
ahead.
How is that possible? You're talking about everybody having to drive an electric car?
It's going to require a lot of rapid change that we don't even conceive as possible right now. What is the problem with trying to push our technological capacities to the furthest extent possible?
This would require, though, raising taxes.
There's an element where, yeah, people are going to have to start paying their fair share in taxes.
Do you have a specific on the tax rate?
You know, you look at our tax rates back in the 60s, and when you have a progressive tax rate system, your tax rate, you know, let's say from zero to $75,000 may be 10% or 15%, et cetera. But once you get to, like, the tippy tops. On your 10 millionth dollar, sometimes you see tax rates as high as 60 or 70%. That doesn't mean all $10 million are taxed at an extremely high rate, but it means that as you climb up this ladder, you should be contributing more.
What you are talking
pause
about.
It, now, big... pause it. Now, I just want to say something. Like, I don't want to be overly critical, but she's underselling it. The tax rate changed in 1963, I think, under Kennedy. And it was dropped. The top marginal tax rate was 90%. And it was dropped to 75% or so under Kennedy. And that 90% was not on the $10 million. In 1950s and early 1960s dollars, that would have been the top. That would have been $3 million. You get $3 million, and then every dollar after $3 million, this is in today's dollars, you pay 90 cents in taxes. So she was soft pedaling it.
Yeah.
But of course, to Anderson Cooper, who has been a news person for 20 some odd years, and I get it, we're all busy, okay? But you could just Google historical tax rates just for the heck of it and realize, like, what she's saying is a mainstream proposition, or at the very least, like, you know, this, like, the astonishment that he registers. Like, either he is acting or pretending, or just, like, completely ignorant of, like, some of the more basic questions. Like, if you get there and you're going to ask for a specific tax rate from a congressperson, which you never ask anybody. Like, you know, you never ask that question. But if you're going to, you owe it to your viewers and, frankly, to your own self-respect to get a sense of what she's saying means in the context of American history, right? And he doesn't, but he responds like this, like flying cars and...
Well, by the way, do you know what FDR's threat was for the top marginal rate? Can anybody guess?
100%.
100%.
Total revolution. Completely expropriate confiscatory the ruling class.
Yes. And So, all right, but continue on, because he's just, his mind is blown. She might as well have said to him, like, all right, here's the plan. Everybody's going to walk on stilts. Everybody, including pets, and we can train them. We can train the pets to walk on stilts.
At an extremely high rate, but it means that as you climb up this ladder, you should be contributing more.
What you are talking about, just big picture, is a radical agenda compared to the way politics is done right now.
Well, I think that it only has ever been radicals that have changed this country. Abraham Lincoln made the radical decision to sign the Emancipation Proclamation. Franklin Delano Roosevelt made the radical decision to embark on establishing programs like Social Security. That is radical.
Do you call yourself a radical?
Yeah, you know, if that's what radical means, call me a radical.
Now, here's the, here you know, that was the part that Brenda and I were listening to, and I was like, yeah, I don't know if I would have taken that tact. Because she could say, like, well, you know, it's not radical in the context of American politics beyond, like, the past 25 years, 30 years. This country, you know, we're talking about 10% of the history of this country. That, I can understand why she took that tact, but I can tell you that an hour later, CBS headline was Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, .. quote, call me a radical. You know, they're not going to take, like, now it's not that big of a deal, but this is, you know, like, there is a tremendous amount of forces that are arrayed to make her seem like she's some type of alien, some type of, like, of dancing on roofs alien.
It's funny because I, you know, apropos of this morning at 11:20 a.m., whoever runs Bernie's account, I think, you know, was kind of indirectly responding to that, said, is it quote unquote radical to demand all Americans have health care, that billionaires pay their fair share of taxes and workers earn at least 15 an hour, and that we transform our energy system in order to combat climate change? I don't think so. And I don't shy away at all from the word radical, but I actually think it's effective, especially if you are a radical, to really keep pointing out that single payer health care and a slight bump in the minimum wage and doing the bare minimum of what's scientifically necessary to deal with climate is moderate, obvious, shouldn't be controversial remotely.
Of course.
Yeah, I think it was a similar construction to what she said in the interview. Like, I don't think she was literally saying, I'm a radical.
No. I agree. Yeah. There's two different constructions. One is like, it, you know, the classic, if you know, defining down what radical means, or the other is defining down what, you know, what is, one is defining down what the term of radical is, and the other is attacking the concept that what she's proposing is radical. And so, you know, it's just a choice. It doesn't really, it probably didn't matter which one she chose. One way or another, they were going to try and make it seem like she's proposing, you know, everybody's going to be on stilts. That's just the way it's going to work. And if not, then you're up against the wall. But Red State caught on a little bit. This is pretty funny. We should have done this after the song.
You don't say.
But yesterday afternoon, they're like, attacks on Ocasio-Cortez are reaching self-defeating levels. Let me suggest this. One of the features of 2018 was the ascension of the right's favorite young upstart socialist defeating a longtime Democratic member of the House. And it goes on. But what was justified criticism over her early mistakes of showing off her ignorance is crossing into self-defeating pointlessness and gaining her defense from fair-minded conservatives. I would say not reaching self-defeating levels. I would say surpassing self-defeating levels. But I would say keep up. Keep up the good work.
Well, I would say, you know, I'm thoughtful, but dude, you know, you never know. There might be other clips of her out there doing things that are benign. So, you know, keep looking.
That's right.
Don't sleep on humiliating yourselves.
Here she is, jump roping at one point.
Yep. Don't forget, this is the third way in between continuing neoliberalism and full-on proletarian revolution.
That's
folks.
Right.
So, third way, she's a moderate.
She's the compromise candidate. Mm-hmm. Calling from a 214 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from? 214. 214. Let's go to calling from an 818 area code. Who's this?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes. 818. Who's this?
Hey, Sam. It's Dave from Jamaica. Hi, MRQ. Hi, Michael. Hi, everybody.
Dave from
Jamaica. Enjoyed your holidays and all.
Yes, thank you. I hope yours were good, too.
Spent most of it in the bathroom, but...
Oh, sorry to hear that.
So, as... Are you guys worried about AOC's, like, security? Because this level of obsession is kind of weird. I mean, I've even seen stuff on the Discord where anything she does, they're, like, on it. I mean, I don't know. It seems kind of bizarre for me.
Who in the Discord is creepily obsessed with AOC?
No. That's not what he means. He means that you're noting that every single far-right reaction. Yeah, I get what you mean. Yes.
I see.
I mean, I think, I imagine that she's, being aware of it. But I don't know that she's in any more danger or any less danger than most. It's conceivable. Mm-hmm. I mean, frankly, I think the danger is less like her politics and more just that she's a popular woman. And this is something that I think women who are in the public eye are all, subject to. But maybe she goes out in public, a little bit more than your average sort of, celebrity politician.
She is endangered on multiple levels, right? Because she's a woman of color, and she is some kind of democratic socialist. So there are a lot of people who might be out to get her.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just looking at it, like even Daily Caller, when you guys brought out the dance video, which made her look normal to me. It's like, oh, she's not a weirdo politician, but for them, no, I don't know. It seems like it's almost, like meat, red meat. So I'm a little worried about it because look how crazy the right wingers behaved when they were in power. Now that they're losing power, who knows what they're going to be up to.
Yes, I think there's something to that for sure. But my experience is they're a lot more toxic when they're in power. That they
it energizes them.
It's just more of a bully mentality.
I think they're toxic no matter what.
Well, I think that's true. But I mean, I guess just from my experience during the Bush years, like I know that I was always aware of stories about, when Jeanine would get approached and threatened and whatnot. And it was, close proximity to the beginning of the war and her speaking out against the war. But as, Republicans lost power, they recede in some weird way.
They start acting like libertarians.
Yeah, exactly. But I appreciate I understand the concern. I appreciate the call, Dave. Have a happy new year.
Same to you guys.
Bye-bye. Let's go to 215 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Hey, Sam. How are
Mindy?
You?
Mindy!
Happy holiday. Happy holiday to Michael and everybody. Just wanted to say hi.
Happy holiday.
Happy new year. Great to hear from you. Did you have a good New Year's?
Yeah. Excuse me?
Did you have a good New Year's?
Yeah. We had a good New Year's. Everything's good. I'm really happy again. I'm kind of happy that we're in control. I mean, I kind of feel like we're the tide's turning and it's better. And it's kind of like you can watch politics a little bit more now and be like not so pissed off every second, and I love how Trump's not getting his wall, and I hope Nancy stays the course because we're supporting of her, so I'm feeling good about that.
Good.
And I just wanted to say a few things, just real quick, in reference to the presidential candidate for 2020. I mean, I know it's fun to talk about everybody that wants to be president, and I know everybody has a certain person that they'd like, but don't you think that we all should just get around to whoever gets nominated?
Well, yeah.
After the nomination.
But after the nomination. I mean, I think that's the thing. Is that I think, like, look, I am all for people being full on, you know, I don't want to say aggressive, but not holding back in terms of supporting their candidate of their choice. That's what primaries are for. I don't believe in the concept of that you can really materially damage a candidate in a primary, particularly in a national a presidential election. I just don't subscribe to that idea.
What was that?
I don't subscribe to that idea.
Sorry, I played this.
This is not beanbag.
And she could hear it.
Oh, it's not beanbag. That was just for you. I didn't even hear it. It's not beanbag. It's not beanbag.
I mean, like, I have a certain kind of, you know, like, I will support anybody, whoever. I mean, I have, like, more that I like, more that I don't like. I mean, I'm not real excited about certain ones, but...
Well, play close to the vest.
I love Mindy being all subtle.
What?
You're so coy.
That's all right. She doesn't have to say.
She's not telling.
She doesn't have to say.
No, I mean...
I'm just curious.
You know, I mean...
Mindy and I think very similarly in some ways, so I'm always curious.
What?
I said some
ways. Yeah, we do.
Yes, so I'm curious.
Why, who I would like to run? You want to know that?
Would you mind giving us
your
favorite
ticket?
Your favorite and
your
least
favorite. No, because the Twitter thing, I mean, whatever this thing over here.
Okay.
The feed is going to get blown up. Okay. I'll tell you, okay? Blow me up. Wait, first of all, blow me up. Wait, before I say that, I want to give Zach from Palo Alto a big shout-out. That was a really good call.
Yeah.
And Isa from Indiana, no fucking clue what she was talking about. And Greg from Oklahoma, please feel better, because we're all with you. Okay, I just wanted to say that. Okay, but who my dream ticket would be, you'll yell at me. I love Kamala. I love her.
And, we don't think similarly.
I know.
What do you like about her politics?
Wait. Can we just hear her least favorite after? I just want to hear. I'm not going to say anything. Don't bother Mindy on Twitter about this. We'll slowly.
Oh,
win her
I don't care. I can take it.
I'm sure you can.
I can. I have 70,000 followers. I'm, so yeah. Really not.
Exactly. She loves the Twitter battle. All right. Who's your least favorite?
I mean, I don't like somebody like. Who's the boring ones that are running, I can't remember
most
his
of
name.
Them.
Kamala
one
Harris.
One of a couple of the senators that are running. What?
I said Kamala Harris. Boom. No, I'm just kidding.
No, a couple of the senator guys that are running.
Booker.
They're so boring, you can't remember
Berkeley,
their names.
Sherrod Brown.
Booker can't win.
Sherrod Brown.
I'm not crazy about Sherrod Brown. I would not be excited about a Bloomberg run. I'm glad Michael Avenatti's gone.
Of course.
Another
one we had to call before everybody else, might I say. Jesus Christ.
What's your say?
Oh,
who do you want? I know you
we
want
always
Bernie.
Said, of course we want Bernie, but we always said if Avenatti was whack, and people would be like, yeah, he's tough. We need that. And then he, of course, went away. Anyways. All right. Fair enough. Well,
all right,
you know
so
what?
Anyway, my dream, a good ticket for me, who I would being a middle-aged, middle-class woman with kind of, like, I can go either progressive or I can go centrist, depending upon, because of my age, I could be more centrist, but because of who I am, I could be a little more progressive. I mean, I think Biden and Kamala could win. That's just my opinion.
I think they could win.
My
last choice ticket, I think, as a could win, yeah, I think that's totally true. I think
Biden's gonna get me too'd right out of the gate. That's my prediction.
What's that?
I think Biden's gonna get me too'd right out of the gate.
I don't know that he's gonna win. Is he even gonna run?
I don't think he's gonna run because I think Beto cancels his path.
Yep.
But
I would like Beto to run. I mean, Beto and Kamala would be a good ticket. There's a lot of good tickets. I mean, I'm not thrilled about a Joe Kennedy if he runs. You know, I mean, a lot of them are corporate. They take big money. I mean, I don't know. It's going to be a tough field. Elizabeth Warren, I don't know if she can win. Do you think she can win?
I think she can win.
What about Bernie? Huh?
What about the main man?
What do you
Don
think
Dada?
Of his? He's got some pretty bold ideas, right?
What about, come on, he's like Miss Booker.
It's true.
He doesn't seem real Jewish to me.
Fuck you.
Are you crazy?
Are you fucking kidding me?
No, I like Bernie. I'd be happy. Seriously, I think that whoever wins in 2020, we can start refining it in 22, 24, like to refine it to get more progressive. That's the way I think. I think we just need to take back the office. I don't think Trump's going to run again. I don't think he's going to be around to run. I think he's going to get make a deal. I think he's going to be gone by the end of 19. That's just my opinion. And I don't think he's going to run again. I don't think he can win again, if he does run.
Mindy, the idea of Donald Trump making a deal to escape conviction after the fact is not inconceivable.
No, it's not inconceivable.
I appreciate the call, Mindy. Happy New Year.
Although I predict, it's going to be Trump, Nikki Haley, and we need to, that's another one with centrist idiots. Disgusting that they ever gave her any cover, but people really need to sharpen the knives on her. Yeah. And I think that, I think she's going to replace Pence, and I think that in the dumb idiot news cycle, that's going to get you a little bit of like, oh my God.
Of course.
She's from a different background. And she said that Trump is rude once.
She's a woman, not as dumb as Sarah Palin.
Right. And it's going to be disgusting. And we need to remind everybody her record, what she said about Bolsonaro, and be extremely aggressive.
And I'll tell you something. And you know, this is why I think there's like folly. And this is why we've been saying from day one that the never Trumper phenomena, you know, to the extent that there's any of these individuals who are sincere. And I don't know. I don't know how you rate their sincerity. But even the most sincere of them are really not useful. They're not useful. You can assume that they are, but it's really, look, they have no constituency. And here is well, I don't know if I would call this Exhibit A. This may be Exhibit, I don't know, somewhere around J.
We're in numbers now.
Right. But here is exhibit whatever of a never Trumper that is basically showing their hand. Here is Anna Navarro, right? She's been a long time never Trumper, right?
Yep, since the campaign.
From the beginning, and Trump has actually even called her out, hasn't he?
Yes, I believe so.
I think so. And here she is on CNN. With who else is on there with their
Bill Kristol, Simone Sanders,
Simone Sanders, former spokesperson for Bernie Sanders,
right.
I think, and Bill Kristol, former cheerleader of genocide and wrong about everything. Looks like he's eaten all his mistakes too these days. But nevertheless, I'm not going to go there.
You just did.
Sorry. I didn't mean to. But here's Anna Navarro telling you, if you didn't know before, that never Trumpers are useless.
But I mean, look, you're going to have, this is going to be a Democratic primary where maybe 25 people put their name in the hat. Out of those 25 people, I think maybe 10 of those campaigns will be very viable to go a very long way. We need a robust primary. I think Democratic voters are really looking for someone that they can trust in what they're saying. You know, I don't like Donald Trump. I'm not a fan, but the people that voted for him trusted what he said, even though I think he's a liar. So voters are looking for somebody that they believe is candidly and authentically delivering their message.
Look, as a Republican who cannot stand Trump, never supported him, never will, I am begging Democrats to please give me somebody that I can vote for. I'm ready to vote for a potted plant. I'm ready to vote for a hologram. I'm not sure I'm ready to vote for Elizabeth Warren. And so, you know, I hope that Democrats think about, you know, themselves falling in love and somebody that can get their juices flowing and their love tank filled, but can also appeal to people like Bill Kristol and Anna Navarro, who really don't want to vote for a hologram. We'd rather vote for somebody that's got a pulse and a brain.
Who is that person?
I don't know. I like the idea of voting for a hologram, though. That could be an upgrade.
Yeah, well, but here's the point. I mean, aside from like the sort of the creepy fall in love with and get your love juices flowing, we don't need Anna Navarro and Bill Kristol to vote for a real Democrat as opposed to a hologram or a potted plant who's not going to do anything that offends them in any way. We don't need them. We just need them not to vote for Trump. And if they're not going to vote for Trump, great. Great. We have the numbers. The midterms showed that. If they stay home and don't vote for Trump. But you know what? They supposedly didn't last time. They're useless. So don't promote them, because all they're going to do is undercut a good Democrat running for office. Period. End of story. There is no other part of the story. That's why I just put a period.
I think there's a phrase called beggars, beggars can't be choosers.
When Ronald Reagan funded the Contras, he did it with a degree of class. And it got my love juices flowing. And when the Contras murdered nuns and killed the people, they did it with a degree of class and respect for the office.
Listen, think about how many Democrats you're going to lose if the standard for to vote for a Democratic presidential candidate is one that Anna Navarro and Bill Kristol can vote
and
for.
And not just Democrats, potential Democrats.
Yeah, anybody. I mean,
Bill people Kristol, don't usually vote.
Bill Kristol and I are looking for someone who is not overtly racist and supports many wars in the Middle East. Right. And if you cannot do that, you might not get our
Maybe
love
we should
juices
nominate
flowing.
Jeb Bush.
Jeb Bush would be an incredible Democratic nominee. He has a certain degree of class.
They're going to try this,
though. He has a certain
degree
of integrity.
Like, the Never Trump conservatives are going to try to find a home in the Democratic Party. And this is a tactic that the Democrats have tried before and failed, trying to pander to moderate conservatives, wealthy suburbanites. Like, if we are going to realign the party into something that is more of a labor party than it's ever been in a long time, we can't have those people.
Right. They're useless. They're useless.
Jeb Bush.
Worse than useless.
Jeb Bush has not used the N-word since at least 1990. That is the type of integrity that Bill Kristol and I are looking for, along with an invasion of Iran using the proper pronouns. That will get my love juices flowing.
All right, lastly, speaking about love juices, this was a very sentimental moment where Mike Pence had to pretend to not be freaked out by...
This is really funny.
As you know, Mike Pence is an ideological and avowed homophobe. He is an ideological and avowed... oppressor of women. He is a fundamentalist Christian who is also a theocrat. And he is having to swear in Kristen Sinema, who is going to probably be tied for my least favorite Democratic senator. But in this one moment, I'm going to allow myself to enjoy the avowedly homophobic Mike Pence having to swear in the first out bisexual senator on a law book. She's also an atheist, not a Bible. And she seems to be perfectly aware of the fact that she might have the ability to make Mike Pence uncomfortable and is enjoying it almost as much as I am. And here we go.
My great honor. Look at this. I look forward to working with you.
Where should I stand? What is this?
Well, why don't you stand? You'll be right.
Could we get a spouse?
No.
Just kidding. Just kidding.
Pause it. Did we hear what you said? Can we get a spouse? Yes. Right. Because, of course, now Mike Pence is not allowed to be alone with a woman, and that is what she's referring to.
Without
Without his wife there to protect him from the vagina dentata. So,
chaos.
Here we go.
So if you hold here and put your right hand in the air, and you might want to rotate your right shoulder out a little bit. Because I need some more
Okay, good.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
See? Just give me tips here.
Thank you. I'm helping you out.
I'm new at this.
Okay. With your right hand raised. Do you solemnly swear to support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic, that you bear true faith and allegiance to the same, that you take this obligation freely, without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion, and that you will well and faithfully discharge the duties of the office upon which you're about to enter, so help you God?
Thank you.
Congratulations. Look forward to working with you. It's very humbling. More than I could tell you. It really is. So, congratulations.
Did she ask him? What did she ask him? I feel like she asked, like, what is it like working with the President Trump? I just play it back. I can't make out what she said.
She's just giving him a hard time.
Yeah.
In a very charming way.
Look at the handshake. That's what I also noticed. Like, I think she, like
She pulled a Trump and, like, held on for a while?
I think there was a slight Trump pull there.
But it's fun. But it's like she's kind of, what I like, what's very funny to me is that she's flirting with him. Like, that's what's so funny about it. She's wearing, like, it's, you know, it's totally fine, but it's not, like, a typical, like, what you
see.
Well,
she's showing elbow.
She's showing elbow. She's showing shoulders. I mean, it's a lot.
I was being facetious.
But especially by Pence. And I think, like, I don't know, when she's, like, a horrible sort of Joe Manchin type, I'll like her style more.
Right. All right, let's just hear it. Let's see if we can make out what she's saying. And just also watch the hands here.
Congratulations.
Is that okay? Right there. Stop. Go back. He lets go and she doesn't.
Yeah.
Right there. Right? Watch.
Show him who's boss.
Watch.
Congratulations. That's very humbling. More than I could tell you. It really is.
He's got double the pie germs now.
Yeah.
Look forward to working with him. Okay? Thank you so much.
Ah, yeah. That was
wow.
Awesome.
So does he go from a horribly self-repressed person, which is one theory, or like, is he crushing on cinema there?
Well, he tried to let go of her hand.
No, I know, but I saw that. But at the end, but it was like, did he try to let go because, I should not
too
be
much.
Feeling what I feel
too
about
much
this
juice in
evil
the love
bisexual.
Tank.
Yeah, there's too much love juices, okay?
Dude, that's exactly why that's the explanation for his entire worldview. Like,
right. Except, but there's also,
but that moment with it where he tries to let go of her hand and she holds it there to ask him one more thing. And he quickly sort of like,
yeah, he doesn't not want to be alone with women because he thinks he would just not talk to them or touch them or look at them. Right.
He doesn't want to be tempted.
Exactly.
I bet you
the temptresses.
He's going to go back and be like, God is going to be so proud of me for how nice I was to that.
Yeah.
That
but
harlot.
Not how hard he jerks off
Jezebel.
About it.
Or do you think... Or
God
do you,
won't be proud about that.
Or do you think that he like takes out some type of like of you know, thing that you slap your... You whip your own back, right? Like an Opus Dei thing.
Got to put my
hair
shirt on.
Right.
Oh my God, he's beating himself with a switch while she like jokes about it with a friend over
exactly,
drinks.
Exactly, exactly.
That's like the film cut.
Yeah, exactly. Alright, let's go to the phones. Calling from an 832 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Hello? Hey, how's it going? Hello? Yeah.
Who's this? Where are you calling from?
This is Demetrius from Houston.
Demetrius from Houston. What's on your mind, buddy?
Well, first and foremost, I just wanted to say thank you guys so much for the work that you do. You guys have been a really huge influence on me, and because of that, I've become a socialist, basically.
Hell yeah.
I mean, you guys' work is just amazing, so please keep it up. But I wanted to get you guys' take on the whole, like, I don't know if you already addressed this, but I want to get you guys' take on the whole, like, Louis C.K. situation and, like, the super weird, like, anti-PC, like, stand-up that he kind of did.
Yeah.
And how, like, there seems to be, like, a lot of right-wing reactionaries who are like
excited.
Basically taking excited over it. And
yeah,
like there was this I saw this particular tweet from a I think his name is Kyle Smith. He's a like a art or like a film critic for the National Review, and he basically framed CK's joke about the Parkland students, basically saying that what he said was correct. because, you know, being a survivor of a school shooting doesn't give you any type of policy expertise. And the tweet just pissed me off because it was like, well, that's not what the joke was about at all. Like, that's not what he was saying. He was basically, you know, chastising people, these Parkland students for basically being activists, being young, and having an opinion.
Right.
He wasn't making some type of in-depth political...
Well, look, let me address it, because yesterday we talked about it. Was it yesterday, I think? Wednesday. On Wednesday we talked about it, first day back.
Okay.
Two things. Okay, let's take the Parkland thing first. And let me just say, broadly speaking, I mean, I only heard those 2 minutes. I just thought it was bad comedy, just to start with.
Mm-hmm.
The Parkland thing, like, I thought it was sort of just silly, and I mean silly insofar as like really inconsequential and just not funny. I found it a little bit, you know, it's transgressive. I get it. It's a little bit shock jockey. The part that I found that was really disturbing to me was the stuff that preceded that, the trans stuff, I found to be even more disturbing. I mean, look, the Parkland stuff, I think it's a dumb joke. It doesn't fit with the premise of his joke, which was, hey, you know, when I was a kid, we were just F-ups and we would just party. And, you know, 50-year-olds like me said, you know, you guys are losers. It's sort of like,
exactly, yeah.
You know, one thing that I know, I mean, I know Louis, and I know that he did not go through a school shooting. And, you know, he definitely maybe have had, you know, some definitely went through some difficulty as a kid, but nothing that traumatic. I can only imagine, you know, but, you know, comedians make jokes like that, and they're, you know, offensive. But I thought the trans stuff was far worse, because in addition it to being like literally a joke that you would hear someone tell in like 1982, and I think literally told many times by Rush Limbaugh, using that same actual like voice, that Faye voice of like the politically correct, you know, whatever voice that he uses.
Yeah, it used to be gay people, and now it's trans people.
Well, but also trans people, I think, even you know, back then. And in addition to that, the hackiness of it, you're talking about people who are there. And you know, you could make this argument about Parkland kids too, but they're, you know, the Parkland kids you know, exist, you know, because of a moment, as it were. But you're talking as a group of people who are literally beaten to death because of their identity. And I mean, you know, Parkland kids obviously went through a horrible trauma, but they don't go around that, like, you know, and are potentially beaten to death because they're Parkland students. Trans people are. And it's not only just like a stupid joke that I think is beneath his talent as a comedian. It is really like it is bullying. And it is a virulent form of bullying. And the whole construction of the joke is just ridiculous. The idea that, like, you know, to say the subtext of the joke is this: when I was a 20, I was an F up, and 50-year-olds look at me and go like, "You're an F up. What are you doing with your life? Get it together." And now that I'm 50, I'm like looking at 20-year-olds going like, "What are you doing with your life? Get it together." Like, he misses the whole funny part about that, which is that he's an old person like me, and his perspective on the world has ossified, and it is stuck in the same perspective as it was 30 years ago, where people should be like me. That's the proper way to be a youth, right? Which is always what the complaint of the olds is. It's just that what being a youth means changes. 50 years ago, people were not taking mushrooms. They were, you know, snapping their fingers and listening to jazz. And that's how the youth was screwed up. Like, you know, it's just a myopic, dumb joke that also on top of it is just a right-wing talking point, and it's incredibly bullying and insensitive, and it really disappointing. But
it really betrays a lack of self-awareness, right? When his calling card has always been self-awareness.
Absolutely. Appreciate the call. His calling card's always been, self-awareness and some measure of empathy for someone who does not, it's somewhat unexpected, right? Like, he's done some stuff that I think is very empathetic. And that's what was so really disappointing about it. It was like there was a total lack of self-awareness and a total lack of empathy.
Yeah, and he usually like acknowledges the ways in which he is shitty and kind of makes a joke out of it. And that was not there this time.
Exactly. Calling from a 530 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Hi, Sam. This is Steve from California.
Steve from California. What's on your mind?
I was wondering if you could go over a little bit what happens with the pledge delegates at the 2020 Democratic Convention. The reason I'm asking is, for example, if you had a race in which Bernie got, let's say, 1,500 delegates and Biden got 1,300 and Warren got 1,000, is there pressure / a rule in which Warren's delegates would be prompted to vote for her, or can they switch over, and can that be an excuse for the superdelegates to come in and say, nobody got to the magic number, and so we're going to give all of our votes to Biden and pass Bernie?
I don't know when the superdelegates pledge at that point, but there's no rule that forces...
The new rule,
go ahead.
The new rules seem to be that they don't come in until the second vote, but that seems to suggest that if nobody gets to the whatever the magic number is, then there would be a second vote.
Right.
And if you're going to have a bunch of candidates, you're probably not going to have, like last time it was two candidates, so you get somebody gets over 50% by, you know, by the way that works. If you have six candidates, it's going to be much harder.
Right.
For somebody to get to 50%.
Right. The candidates then go on, I think, to pledge their delegates to another candidate. Now, I don't know if those delegates actually have to, and it may be a function of the state's rules, specific rules in the Democratic Party in those states, but I don't believe that those delegates have to be faithful to whom pledges them, right? In other words, like Warren could come in and say, I pledge my delegates to Bernie Sanders. And I'm pretty sure, I don't know how faithful they all have to be, but that would be happening, which I also happen to think would be more likely in that situation.
When we're beginning and talking about how it could theoretically be a good thing to have several progressives in debates, and so they can sort of debate the nuances of these issues and move the Overton window, I don't want to get into a position in which a bunch of progressives end up screwing themselves because they let the superdelegates in.
I'll check on that as we get closer to it. I'll check on that. But I'm people throw their delegates to in the second round to the candidate of their choice. I believe. Appreciate the call.
All right. Thank you, Sam.
Calling from an 857 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from? Still have 25 people online. 857. 857 going once, going twice.
Hello.
Oh, you got it just under the wire. Yeah.
Well, hi, first time caller. My question is asking guys.
Is this literally the first time you've ever used the phone? Because it's not good.
I had you guys on speaker. I was finishing some accounting homework.
Oh, okay. All right. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
George from Chicago.
George from Chicago. What's on your mind? You've got to start to pick up the pace a little bit here, buddy.
Okay, sure. So my question is actually, so I'm looking at the 2020 debate.
So I'm under the belief that Hillary is going to make an attempt to run. Do you think it would be good strategy that all the progressive candidates make her the punching bag? As in, point out that she's the reason that we have Trump.
Dude, you got to focus on your accounting homework right now. I think, like you know, that you're like four hypotheticals down the road. I
fucking love it, bro.
I don't.
Wait, make who the punching bag? I missed that.
Hillary.
Oh yeah, totally. Of course.
Punch that bitch in the face.
I'll be your punching bag. Actually, you know what Bhaskar said on my show last night? Who was the guy?
I appreciate the call, man.
But Bhaskar was like, if you're like, and this is us, like peak, you know, socialist, Bernie bro, whatever. And he was like, if you're still like, that's just I forget the way he put it, but like, if you're still on Hillary Clinton, and in addition to that, if you don't feel some measure of like sympathy for her, just on a personal level,
right? You like, got a mental issue.
Unless you're, I mean, always with the caveat, unless you've literally been on like the receiving end of her policies, like particularly foreign policy. Then okay, of course. But like, if you're just like schmo on the street doing your accounting homework with a really bad phone connection, lay off Hillary Clinton.
Unless she runs. Let's just not.
Let's cross that bridge when we come to it.
Cheer up. It might never happen.
Right.
Calling from a, let's see. This sounds like it's overseas. Calling from a 770 area. I don't know. It's a +44. Who's this? Where are you calling from? Got to be quick.
Hello?
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 Am I on? Am I on? Hello?
You're on.
Okay. I actually got a good quick one. It's only a few weeks away from Valentine's Day. Do you think that Trump will be inviting the new Brazilian president over, considering they can share ideas on fascism in the Americas?
As part of Valentine's Day celebration, that would be lovely to see. That would be so cute. And always better to see someone in person than send a card. That's what I always say.
But, you got to put his main opponent in jail.
Oh, my God. This guy's jealous.
His justice minister put the biggest, most important figure in their country in jail. Jeff Sessions wouldn't even stand the Russia investigation.
I would much rather them just have a romantic dinner together than decide to invade Venezuela. Let's put it that way.
We're going
to
put a Trump resort at the source of the Amazon, folks.
Appreciate the call. It's
probably in the works, man.
Thank you.
Calling from a 517 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from? Got to be quick.
Hey, Sam. This is Jake from Michigan.
Jake from Michigan. What's on your mind?
Hey, just letting you know, I'm home from work right now, sick, and that's how much I love you guys. I decided to call in.
It's very sweet.
While I'm sick, so nothing better to do. So I had a question about general outdoorsmen, people, conservationists, and people that are fishermen, hunters, whatever. It's kind of interesting being from Michigan and kind of seeing different people out in the woods and stuff and all the diverse backgrounds of political conservatives, liberals,
right,
being outdoorsmen. Sure. And I think there's a real opportunity for people to kind of come together on this.
Yeah.
Basically for the overarching thing with the environment, instead of bickering at each other.
That's like Teddy Roosevelt conservation, right? I mean, they used to call themselves conservationists.
Exactly.
And outdoorsmen and outdoors women used to be a big environmental pitch. Like, you want to save the environment so that we can have enough animals to shoot at, or to go camping or hiking or something like that. Like, yeah, look, I think that's healthy, but you know, the NRA has done a very good job of poisoning that well. And
exactly.
You know, I think look, there has been an attempt over the past 10-15 years to figure out how we can bridge this gap. And frankly, like, when I look at Anna Navarro, who has built a career on being not a never Trumper, say, I would vote for a potted plant, but not actually a thinking member of the Democratic Party, who represents the fundamental values of it, like fairness and whatnot, when it comes to like, you know, predatory lending, whatnot. I think it should drive home the point to people that it's great. You go out into the woods, you're going deer hunting or you know, pheasant hunting or whatever it is, and you can have a good conversation with the guy next to you and get them involved. That's great. I'm all for that. But as a political movement, to go start seeking out those people, I think the return on investment is just not enough to warrant the effort and the downsides. And so that's my feeling there. But yeah, that conservationist thing, that's been around for a long time.
I understand that Democrats have their candidates. But what if you could find someone who is involved in, I don't know, as an example, the bankruptcy in Wachovia, who signed an early letter saying that we should invade Iran. Then Bill Kristol and I, our juices
will you take that as a drop? Will you take that, like, I want someone that Bill Kristol and I can vote for? Will you pull that as a drop, please?
The opportunity there is for, I think, local DSAs, because the privatization of public lands is not popular with those guys at all.
And that reframes the debate. And I think there are some people who also in the Nebraska section of the pipeline, Keystone, that also...
The eminent domains.
But some of those people, some of them, particularly that one, hits so hard on them. It opened them up to a wider critique of oil industry, the environment. It shifted a broader politic.
Look, go ahead.
I mean, we'll see. But I think more so than trying to get right-wing populists to be left-wing populists, which is maybe not going to happen. Like, I saw my friend try and fail miserably to get her gun-loving swamp Yankee dad into Bernie instead of Trump. He was like, nope, he watches Fox News all day. That's it. But what we maybe do need is to get left populists more into things like self-defense and prepperism, because we might need those things down the line.
I think I would focus on doing the split between, there are two different kinds of outdoorsmen and how they see themselves. There's the one that came like basically post-90s, who are sort of the weekend warrior types who buy AR-15s and camo and pretend like they're soldiers. But there are a lot of like guys who just have been doing pheasant hunting since they were kids. And I think those people, I think there is...
Yeah, no, I definitely...
You don't lead with the Democratic Party. You don't lead with the Democratic Party.
And I do think in all these areas, I do think that it's not huge margin, but I do think there are some people who... They're not swing voters in the dumb way that it's usually presented, like they're waiting for Bloomberg, but they are actually swing voters in the sense that they are kind of not... They're sort of all over the place.
All right, I'm going to... we got to be quick on the rest of these calls here. Calling from a 612 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Hi, Sam. This is Brenda.
Hi, Brenda. How are you?
I'm doing great. And I just wanted to call and thank you for a year of fantastic podcasting and commentary. I wanted to thank Michael for... I really like Michael. He's fantastic. And I wanted to do a shout-out to Jamie, because I know what it's like sometimes to have to try to fight for, a little bit of space in a room full of guys.
There you go.
Thanks, Brenda.
Yeah.
And Matt, yeah. Brendan, yeah. Sorry.
Not exceptional
commentators.
I know, I'm teasing.
I don't ever see them, so they don't exist.
Not exceptional.
<There you go. laughs> Well, Brenda, Happy New Year. Thanks for listening.
Yeah. It's cool. And let's hope that, I'm on site-based assistance, from HUD, site-based HUD assistance, and let's hope that doesn't go away.
Right. Hang in there. Hopefully this will be resolved. Yeah, in the next 3 or 4 weeks, hopefully this it doesn't go any past the next couple of days. But
Can I ask one quick?
Yeah,
can I ask one question?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm white as white as white, and could you tell me what the significance of the shofar is for you?
Oh, well, the shofar is blown at the high holidays, at Rosh Hashanah and during Yom Kippur. And it's basically just to announce, the new year, essentially, and the 10-day period in between there, which is sort of weird, but it goes, the new year begins, and then you have basically a 10-day period to atone and assess what you did last year and then not do it next year. Appreciate the
call. Sorry for not... for not knowing about that.
No, that's all right. No, I don't, yeah, people okay. don't.
Okay. Apology call, accepted, okay. Brenda.
She calls
an apology accepted.
She calls it at least the shofar, as opposed to the Jew horn.
The Jew horn. Call which is what we traditionally call it in the community.
Calling from a 302 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Hi, this is Lincoln, and I'm calling from Philadelphia.
Lincoln from Philadelphia. Got to be quick, buddy.
Oh, okay. Since it's real quick, the previous caller, Brenda, that sounded like a dude.
Oh, well, it wasn't.
Well, it sounded like it.
Great. Good for Lincoln. Listen, if you're going to call in and troll, bring your A game, not your like E, F, or G game. All right? Call from an 810. Because I like trolls. I would have engaged you for the rest of the show.
Yeah, the only part of my relief of that total failure was the fact that we're not going to be here for another 30 minutes.
Yeah.
While Sam argues with some fucking moron.
Calling from an 810 area code. Who's this?
Is this Sam Cedar?
Oh, boy. Short leash.
Holy shit, I can't believe I got through.
Who's this?
No, here. This is Matthew from Michigan.
Matthew from Michigan, what's on your mind? What's going on? We're only getting calls from Michigan and Philadelphia, but
that's
go ahead.
That's weird.
Smart correction. No, I just want to... I'm driving right now, so...
Okay, I'll pull over. Well, I'm sorry to interrupt.
But I'll make it quick.
Yeah.
This last 2 years with this monstrosity that we got in the Oval Office,
right,
is just driven me crazy. But I got to thank Trump because I discovered you guys.
Oh well, then I guess silver linings.
You welcome.
Yeah. So I just wanted to say hi and happy New Year, and I'll call again.
All right.
And
appreciate the
good
call.
Good to talk to you.
All right. Good to talk to you, too. Bye. Sounded like, you sounded like John Glazer, also from Michigan.
Hmm.
Call from a 706 area code. We got three more calls. 706. Who's this? Right. Where are you calling from?
Hey, this is Thomas calling from Georgia.
Georgia. Thomas from Georgia. What's on your mind? Got to be quick.
Okay. So I consider myself a progressive. But I'm a little bit concerned that just raising the minimum wage is going to fix the problems. And the issue is that the system is still going to be the same. So these corporations are just going to hike up their prices because now the people are making more money so they can pay more. What are your thoughts on a tax system where the profits have to go towards the employees? So if a company makes more than, say 80% of their profits, go over what they're paying their employees, the government just comes in and sweeps it off the top. So they're penalized for doing that. What are your thoughts on something like that?
I think what you're talking about, Bernie Sanders had suggested something to that effect, like a confiscatory tax if there was some type of relationship maybe between the C-suite and the workers. I mean, I think, look, I don't know. I mean, I think there's arguments about, corporate tax versus personal tax. I, broadly speaking, am for a confiscatory tax policy on, I would be very comfortable with returning to, the tax system that we had in the 50s and 60s, where if you make over 3 million, I might change the number down up, but broad, like the broad outlines, you make over $3 million, every dollar after that is taxed at like a 90% rate. I would have no problem with that. And I think that's really I don't know if you want to like have it go directly to the workers as opposed to go and fund governmental programs that are universal in their nature, and I think like we know what, broadly speaking, what we want those to be. We want there to be a universal healthcare insurance system. We want there to be a free college option in every state in the country. I would then move to relieve student debt more or less across the board. And then I would nationalize some of the some of the stuff in this country that involve, like, you know, energy and maybe also like internet infrastructure. But that, you know, I specifically going in and going company by company to return profits specifically to workers. I mean, I think, like, I would and we're seeing already legislation that would encourage worker-owned enterprises, and I think that's good. But I think the way you're talking about it, I don't know if it's the most efficient, but I appreciate the call. All right.
This is a headshot from Bernie right here. I love this.
Bernie Sanders, Representative Liz Cheney, daughter of Dick Cheney, yesterday attacked the fraud of socialism. Really? I wasn't aware that it was socialism that lied about weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, got us into a horrific war that we should have never started.
Mic nice. Drop, motherfucker.
Wow.
Yeah, look at me keeping up with the youngins.
There you go.
Fuck out of right. here.
Two more calls. Calling from a 626 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Hello, is this me?
Yes, it is you. You are the second to last caller of the week.
Oh, hello, Sam. I'll make it really quick. Thank you for taking my call. And I really enjoyed your last libertarian debate. I don't remember the guy's name.
Adam Kokesh.
It was very informative.
Thank you.
And very funny.
Yes.
Thank you for doing that. And my brother is starting to get into that sort of philosophy of free market and the government is all stupid. And I would like, if you could give me 30 seconds of your time, to explain to you how I understand that there's no free market.
Okay, go ahead.
So you can just... Okay, the way I understand that there's no free market is, the reason is, if a free market is completely free, it's not free from that dark hand of cheating and cronyism and all that bad stuff. So that's not free. So if you regulate a market, then to keep it free from all that bad stuff, then it's not a free market anymore. So that's why there's no free market.
Well,
so I kind of sort of get it right.
Yeah, there's no free market because government is, the market only exists because of society and government having set up a structure in which that market exists. Money would have no value. Money would have no value were it not for taxes, right? The reason why the money in your pocket has value, the store will take it because the store can only pay its taxes to the government, which has a monopoly of force, in those dollars, okay? Uh-huh. And corporations... All the players in the market in some way are implicated by government policy on day one. He needs to show you, if he thinks there's a free market, he needs to show you a market that takes place outside of the confines of government regulation. And it doesn't exist. And so once the government has entered into, once the government is there and has created the market, it is all a political choice as to who is going to have the most power in that marketplace. Whether the power is going to be asymmetrical or whether it's going to be there's going to be some type of equality of power. When you allow people to assemble as a corporation and allow them tax benefits on the money that they make, allow them to step back from liability for products that they make or amass a certain amount of money at a different tax rate, then the people they're negotiating with, you are putting your thumb on the scales. And so the question is simply, this question is simply going to be, where are you going to put your thumbs and how much force are you going to exert? And that's the question. There's no question. There is no free market. It simply does not exist. For you to want to have a free market, you got to go to, like, maybe, like, you know, the outskirts of, you know, in Somalia. And and even then.
No, but
let's stop using Somalia as an example because they're pulling it together.
Right.
But
right.
Yes, it basically just warlordism.
Yeah,
that's exactly what I told my brother.
Well,
that, he gave me an example that he stopped at some bank, and some guy was offering stereos, really cool stereos, at the back of his truck, and he bought one really cheap. And as soon as he was driving home, he was like, "I should have checked the inside of the box, see if there was an actual stereo in there." This guy could have been selling rocks because that's one of the main scams that they do, right?
Right, right.
And I told him, like, that's exactly why there's no free market. That's exactly why Best Buy is set up.
But, you know, I mean, you can even go further, because not only is there no free market, how did that guy get to where he was? How did that guy drive? He didn't.
You had to drive on a road to sell those stolen stereos.
Who conquered the land we're on?
Honestly, I mean, there's it's already it's just not possible.
Yeah,
and but
exactly.
All right. Well, all right, I'm not going to tell you to get a new brother, but but all right, I got to take final call of the first week of 2019. We have taken every call except for one that has been on the line for over 60 minutes. We still have 19 callers on the line, but we've done our best to get through as many calls as possible today. But you, calling from the 210 area code, are the final caller.
Hey, I'm the lucky one.
The first week of 2019.
Hi, it's an honor. I'm sorry. My name is Cody. I'm from San Antonio. Shout out to John from San Antonio, too. Hey, I have a quick question for y'all, because I've been dealing with my dad trying to convert him a little bit for a while. He's kind of he and I grew up watching like a bunch of Fox News, like back 2008. We were like your stereotypical Fox people, but you know, I was only like 12 at the time, so kind of, you know, and you know, I didn't really actually know anything about politics, but I was just repeating the same usual stuff,
right?
So the Republican Party. So that's kind of the lens I look at Republican politics through now. Just a load of uninformed stuff. I would just say, since you got the libertarian debate coming up and everything, I would just ask you, I wrote my question down real quick. Is there just, cause I keep arguing with my dad about, Medicare for all. It's not getting through to him really. I think mostly on the taxes part of everything, but he loves to come back and say, you know, the massive military budget, which is the next 7 or 11 countries or whatever combined, is really necessary. I guess I would just ask you, is there a good way to get through to a libertarian, kind of a right libertarian, about how much military spending hinders this country and how much and how it could move on and translate to a better policy for people like
Medicare? The reality is that we don't need the money. We don't need the savings from the military to pay for Medicare for all. I mean, the reason why it's a problem to expend that much money on the military is that we're expending a lot of money and we're not getting a good return on investment in terms of improving people's lives. And on top of the fact that it encourages us to do stuff that really hurts hundreds of thousands of people. Now, I don't get the sense that your father might be amenable to that argument. But I mean, the point being, I think that, like you simply say, like if we were to return to the tax rates of his heyday in the 50s and the 60s, we could pay for Medicare for all multiple times over. We could provide for a free college education multiple times over. I mean, so, you know, we didn't worry about the deficit when we gave a massive tax cut to corporations who didn't need that money. And so, you know, I wouldn't even focus on pulling it from the military, you know, just particularly based upon what I suspect your father's interested in. But
is there a way that instead of, I mean, I'm just thinking like, I don't know, maybe I'm trying to make a rhetorical point. It's you've got a good point. I don't think I've been seeing it from that angle of you don't need the military budget. I just, you know, I think it's funny to me how many libertarians are don't spend a dollar on a damn thing except for, you know, the military, obviously, for a lot of these libertarians.
Yeah, that's
cool. I'll close real quick and I'll let you go. I just want to say to Mr. Michael Brooks, I'm a big fan. Thank you for shitting on Derek Fisher for 20 minutes as a fan of San Antonio. I watched that shot live. So I want
to
appreciate
that
all you guys. You guys are all great. I'm going to keep watching. Thank you. What was that?
That needed to happen.
All right. Appreciate the call, Cody. All right, folks. That is the program for today. We will see you on Monday.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between Shifted in.